You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Alzheimer's Association tells us some 5.7 million Americans have that debilitating disease. And get ready for this. By 2050, that number is expected to nearly triple to 16 million. Over the last year, a number of promising fronts have opened up in the research to combat this disease. And here to talk about some of them is Dr. Bruno Giordani. He is a professor of psychiatry, neurology, psychology, and nursing at the University of Michigan, where he's associate director of the Michigan Alzheimer's Disease Center. So, doctor, just to be clear, when we talk about Alzheimer's disease, are we talking about one type of dementia?
That's right.
Can we use the terms interchangeably as we talk through this about research, treatment, and diagnosis or not?
Well, I mean, most people do. The real idea is that dementia, sort of they call it the umbrella term. So it covers all the kind of progressive dementias. So Alzheimer's disease, though, is about 75% of those. Then you also have other really difficult disorders like frontotemporal disorder that affects the front part of the brain. You have Lewy body disease associated with Parkinson's, and you have a number of other disorders that are part of that other grouping. But because and vascular dementia, of course, too. But because so many of them often are comorbid with Alzheimer's, or Alzheimer's itself is the largest, that's why so many folks talk about Alzheimer's.
So when we think of, for example, stats for Michigan from the Alzheimer's Association, which tells us right now about 180,000 Michiganders over age 65 have it, and by 2025, which is not very far away, it's going to be 220,000 and then up from there. So how hopeful is it?
Really, every year, the Alzheimer's Association has the largest sort of single conference for one disease. That's the Alzheimer's International Conference. That conference every year really sort of puts forward what's the latest information. And honestly, this one was hopeful in a number of ways. There are a lot of things going on that make it of real interest. There are a couple of new medications out that appear to have some effect, which is very exciting. And these are studies that are in the midst of clinical trials, but they've already finished some analyses for some, or sort of the initial trials have been done. And this is really the first time that anybody said that some of these drugs that attack amyloid in the brain.
So, and which is what?
So amyloid, Alzheimer's disease really is comes from basically the association between two things that naturally occur in the brain. One is amyloid, and amyloid can lay down in the brain 25, maybe more years before you even see a symptom. And this is really a byproduct of really sort of a mix-up in the system, it looks like. And these proteins don't clear from the brain, these sort of precursor proteins don't clear from the brain the way they used to, and they clump together in plaques.
So we're talking about a type of protein.
Yeah, and essentially then at the same time you have tau, which is sort of the thing that kind of keeps, cements those cells and their axons, the messenger pieces of those cells together. And eventually what starts to happen is maybe it's because of the amyloid, maybe it's because of some other process going on, but tau begins to release from the cells begin to fall apart, and you see what are called tangles. So in 1901, when Dr. Alzheimer's identified the first patient with Alzheimer's, of course, we've had patients for Alzheimer's forever, but he sort of identified the first person, Auguste Deter, and looked in her brain, he saw plaques and tangles. He identified plaques and tangles, these sort of clumps of protein and these misshapen cells. Those are the key indicators of Alzheimer's.
So knowing that, then that, I get, am I right that that starts leading researchers to what do we do medication-wise to slow this down or prevent?
Or prevent. But, you know, the problem has been, honestly, one of the big problems has been we only treat when the symptoms appear. But now that we understand that amyloid lays down years, decades potentially, before somebody ever really has symptoms, now we have other ways to look at treatment we never did before. And this is only in the past few years that this has been understood. I mean, we can use what's called a plaque buster. So identify that plaque, highlight that plaque so that the white cells, the cells of the brain itself meant to clear stuff up, go after that. We can develop ways to keep the tau in the cells. We can develop ways that sort of break up those enzymes and kind of find the right enzymes and push the right enzymes in that normally create this amyloid. So there's all sorts of ways to look at this down the pike now that we never really kind of had the ability to do till we really understood the disease.
So how far down the pike?
We're dealing with such a significant disorder that really, you know, we could have, as you say, by 2050, we could have 14 million people with this disorder, over 400 million worldwide. So this is a dramatic disorder. So there's a lot more panic now in terms of just let's prepare for it. One thing I have to say is that thanks to the Alzheimer's Association, we really have a push now in Congress. And President Obama, President Trump have signed legislation to increase significantly the budget in Alzheimer's. So I think that budget change has meant a huge difference. I mean, Alzheimer's research used to get $500 million a year in funding in 2014. Now we're up to $2.3 billion. We're still not at the level of cancer, heart, or HIV, but at least now there's recognition this is a disease where we have to do really solid research. Because of that, we have these new things. We have aducanumab. We have BAN2401, two brand new drugs that reported that they were showing if they reduce amyloid, even in patients who already have symptoms, there was an improvement in symptoms, and most important as well, there was a reduction in the amyloid in the brain.
So it could slow the progression.
And those two things, both the improvement in cognition and the change in amyloid related to the dose of the drug. So you have what's called a dosage effect, so pretty sure something's happening. So that's really exciting. I mean, a lot more research has to go on with those two drugs, but at least they knew that they could go on and look more carefully at these drugs. At the same time, we have exciting, and which is really exciting, and we'll probably hear news of the first one at the next AAIC. We have five studies at least going on that are called prevention trials.
I think so that's what people will perk up
with.
Those
are the things people are really interested in. So the prevention trials. So, for example, they are looking at folks in a set of them. They are looking at folks who have early onset. So it's a very small percentage of individuals, only about 200,000 people who have early onset. That means they get this disease in their 30s, 40s, 50s. But the thing about that is, when they get it that early, they don't have all those other things the rest of us have, like diabetes, heart disease, and other things. And the other thing about early onset is if you're going to get that disease, you're going to get it about 5 years plus or minus when your parent did. So now we know, okay, if you can take these folks, they have amyloid in the brain, we know about when they're going to develop it. If you give them medication and it slows the appearance or it doesn't appear, now we're really talking about something. So those are the Alzheimer's Association has collected people from around the world who had early onset families. They bring them every year, even now, to the AAIC meeting so they can see the research going on. In Medellin, Colombia, there is a small village that has an extremely high rate of familial onset. Even those individuals are taking part in drug trials. And then at the same time, there's a couple of trials looking at ApoE interactions, people who carry the ApoE gene and have a family history. There's another gene called TOMM that seems to be, T-O-M-M, that seems to be associated. So there are a number of trials going on that are really trying to do early identification. There's another critically important trial called the A4 study that basically says, look, if you're over 65, and this is a trial we've been doing, if you're over 65, and you feel like you don't have memory problems, we'll test you, see that you don't have memory problems, and we will give you an amyloid scan.
To get those
to
early
see
signs.
See if you have early signs.
Not too dissimilar than, for example, a mammogram.
Exactly. I mean, the whole point of this is, look, we now have, over the past couple of years, we can now image amyloid, and now we can even image tau. So we can image the two basic components of this disease. So now you have incredible markers. You have amyloid, which is early risk, and you have tau, which, remember I said, it starts to appear as the symptoms appear. So you can look at biological symptoms of this disease, something we haven't been able to do.
Should we argue that screening should be, it could be a cost saver, that insurance should cover widespread screening, the way we push women to have mammograms?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of discussion about that. The biggest piece of the discussion is that an amyloid scan is very expensive. And if you do an amyloid and tau scan, you're in the $15,000 range. So that's clearly not going to happen with screening. But what if we knew the ways to get people in for that screening early? So that's where a lot of the research. We have finished one study. We have another large study going on in Detroit, where we are looking at individuals, African Americans in this case, who may have some mild complaints but are genuinely normal. And we're looking at both computerized testing over time to see if we can see any change, as well as EEG, electroencephalography. Maybe if we look at some of these other techniques we've had for a long time, we may be able to find tipping points when healthy individuals should get that scanning. A lot of work in blood as well, right?
Right.
We still don't have any blood markers, but there's a lot of research going on here at Michigan, a lot of research going on around the country looking at blood-based markers.
So if you were to think of a spectrum, one being the dark ages, knowing nothing about what's causing this dementia, and number 10 being, we know what it is, we can treat it, we can even prevent it, where would you say we are on that scale?
Well, I'll tell you what, your scale is a little bit skewed, and
okay.
I should tell you that, because remember I said 1901, Dr. Alzheimer said, boink. So Dr. Alzheimer's found this, described it. Kreplin came along and said, oh, yeah, look, here's a poor, because the problem was, or the unfortunate thing for her was, she had early onset. So everybody said, oh, maybe this is pre-senile dementia. So we're seeing young people get this terrible disease that we know everybody gets when they get old. And that was the problem. This is not what everybody gets when they get old. So in the 1970s and 80s, when I was working as, I'm sure, an elementary school child, not, but when I was working in the 1970s and 1980s at Mount Sinai in New York, we were really interested in Alzheimer's as if it was not that common a disorder. Now we know really what we're looking at. But remember, this disorder that was identified, people were beginning to do research on it, didn't have its first diagnostic criteria till 1984. So not until 1984 did somebody say, okay, if you're a doctor, here's how you diagnose it. These are the symptoms you look for. Now we've had a new diagnostic criteria and a brand new discussion of a diagnostic criteria going on now. Really, those things hadn't happened. The other thing we have now is a diagnostic criteria for mild cognitive impairment, because we now recognize that as these symptoms first develop, we may be able to catch them perhaps early. So now we have a diagnosis that says, look, we understand that somebody has changed in their symptoms. They are having some mild problems, not interfering with life. Let's do that. But all this stuff now, and then these would be individuals we should treat first. But the whole idea, all this stuff, didn't start happening until 1980s, 1990s. So it's skewed, so there's an incredible amount going on now. And, you know, the government has mandated, sort of, the government has hopefully mandated that by 2025, we'll have a cure or we'll be able to slow the progression. Remember, this is the only disease that you cannot prevent, slow the progression, or cure. So the thought is by 2025, hopefully, at least we'll have one of those ticks off the block.
And when you think about the pressure of the baby boom generation just moving along and what that's going to do, and I guess people who want to have any sense of maybe what they can do lifestyle-wise? Any changes can people make now? Would the Alzheimer's Association website be a good place for people to get information about that?
Sure. The Alzheimer's Association website has a lot of that. NIH.gov does, but honestly, it's easy just to go to the Alzheimer's Association website and get that information. The Michigan Great Lakes chapter, the Detroit chapter, the Toledo chapter, all three of those that our center works with all have that information. Our center website has all that information as well. Any of these places, folks can get that early information. And it's important because the other thing that came out of probably, as I've gone to all of these from the beginning, these AAIC meetings, and it's not because every other year they're in an attractive European place, but the point is that as I've watched these develop, you've watched the whole idea of Alzheimer's treatment changed. Early on, it was all about laboratory-based. Then imaging began to be included and people got interested. And now there's a lot more information, a lot more studies related to caregivers, for one, as well as how to potentially, what can you and I do? And that's the key, because if this pill doesn't come along so fast, or multiple pills don't come along so fast, we need to do something ourselves. If you look at what's going on now, all these new treatments are all aimed at what can you do as a person. So there is a set of studies called the FINGER trials that are going on around the world, and the POINTER study in the United States is going on, all linked by the Alzheimer's Association. All are about lifestyle. If you take care of your health, if you exercise, if you maintain a good diet, and if you exercise your brain, can we reduce the onset? And all of that is beginning to have some very interesting early information. The last one that came out at this meeting was the Sprint Mind study, which pointed out good cardiovascular health really makes a difference.
Dr. Bruno Giordani is Associate Director of the University of Michigan's Alzheimer's Disease Center. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Happy to do that.